Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we got plenty of UFC information for you guys here today as we are going to be dropping our official predictions and, of course, previewing the UFC Vegas 94 card. And it's brutal, guys. Let me just tell you, it's a rough one. It's a rough one. I'm actually going to be cleaning out my apartment down at college as I wait to move into my new townhome type place with three of my buddies. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I'll have my night to myself. Maybe I'll get a couple brewskis, crack them open, sit out on the porch, watch a little UFC. And what's the main event, you may be asking? It's Amanda Lemos versus Virna Jandiroba. Yeah, safe to say, not as hype as I would like. But you know what? We're going to go through the card. We're going to find some diamonds in the rough, as you can say. Also on today's episode, I mean, we're just going to be kind of previewing the rest of the year as far as the UFC is concerned for pay-per-view-wise. There's a lot of rumors circling around. Going to be talking about those a bit as well, discussing film, going over 10 new things in pop culture. And your surprise topic for today's episode, we are going to be finally giving my official review of the book by Dave Ramsey, Baby Steps Millionaires. An excellent book, and I think it's going to really help me out in my quest to become a millionaire. It's all about action, too. We're going to get to that book later on today's episode, but very excited to be getting right on into it. And there's only one way to kick off every episode of the Surprise Jab Podcast, and that is, of course, by looking at some new UFC fights. And by the way, I'm recording this episode the day after episode 103. So, I mean, not much has happened, but three new fights did get announced in the less than, I think, 24 hours since I last recorded the past episode. So let's talk about them. UFC Vegas 97 going down September 7th, headlined by Gilbert Burns versus Sean Brady, two top 10 welterweights. Andre Petroski just fought. That's right. He just beat Josh Fremd last Saturday. So that would have been July 13th and September 7th. Already has another fight booked. He'll be taking on Dylan Budka. Dylan Budka, I remember him from Dana White's Contender Series. He won a very boring decision. And then in his UFC debut, he took on Cesar Almeida and showed that he had just one goal to get a takedown. He had no striking, and he got TKO'd while trying to get a takedown. So he's interesting, 7-3 overall for his career-wise, and he's 24 years old. Andre Petroski, 11-3 now, 6-2 now in the UFC, got a much-needed win, and I saw an interview, he said afterwards in the post-interview that, he knew it was a boring performance, he knew he just grappled Josh Fremd, but he said he had to get a win after getting KO'd in back-to-back fights, and I kind of completely agree with him. And I mean, he's got some good wins. The Josh Fremd one, probably his third best, then Wellington Turman, then Gerald Meerschaert. It's a very good win to have on his record. Andre Petroski, good guy, good competitor. I'm actually a fan of him. I remember him from The Ultimate Fighter. I think it was season 29, I believe it might have been. I know it was the season Brian Battle won. But yeah, Andre Petroski, already got another fight booked. I predict him to beat Dylan Budka very handsomely. Another fight announced. This one going down. UFC Vegas 96, August 24th, in the women's flyweight division, 125 pounds, as Wang the Joker Kong, who is 5-0, making her UFC debut. Love the name, from China. She takes on Victoria Leonardo. Leonardo, 1-3 in the UFC. Victoria is 9-5. Has a win over Mandy Bohm, Haley Cohen, two lower level names I recognize. But Wang Kong actually holds a win over Wu Yannan. I recognize her from, I think it was UFC 278 she fought on that card. Got finished, actually. I think we're going to be bringing that fight up later on today's episode somehow. But Wang Kong, why not? 5-0, nicknamed the Joker. She looks like a man. Let me tell you, usually when they look like a man, they're usually pretty good. So we'll be riding with her, I bet. Should be an opening prelim, second opening prelim on that Vegas card. But hopefully these Vegas cards are done soon, because they're sort of killing me. And this fight's going to segue into our next segment, so that's what I kind of like about this. The final new fight announced, and really new news overall for today, July 16th, 2024. Going down at UFC 306, otherwise known as Noche UFC, at the Sphere in Las Vegas on September 14th, Manuel Torres versus Ignacio Mohamedez in the men's lightweight division. This fight is so good. I'm actually sad one of these guys is going to have to lose. I mean, Manuel Torres, 15-2 professionally, 3-0 in the UFC. All three of those fights, round one finishes. Come on. Come on, man. He's so good. He's so good. Of his three UFC fights, he's had two performance of the night bonuses. I mean, he's so legit. His opponent, Ignacio Mahomedez, 15-5, 4-2 in the UFC. Holds wins over Trey Ogden, Christos Giagos, Roosevelt Roberts. He's gotten one performance of the night for a crazy spinning back kick knockout of Roosevelt Roberts. And he's just kind of proving that he's going to be pretty good. And this is the best fight probably on the card so far. Might be second best behind some others. But I'm excited to see what other fights get put together for UFC Noche. But yeah, those three fights are the only one new ones that have been announced. But in terms of UFC Noche, I should say, of course, the star-studded, just insane event that is going to be UFC Noche going down, of course, at the Sphere. Dana White recently said that he already has $17 million invested into this event. They're only putting on 10 fights, which means there's a lot of regulations for this event. I believe the news is going to slowly keep coming out here and here and here. And truly, I believe this is going to be a legendary event. Second time they're doing UFC Noche. But the unfortunate thing is Dana White announced that there's only going to be 10 fights on the card. And usually, guys, I want you to know for pay-per-views, they try and do 13, 14, 15. I've seen 16. I mean, you rarely see 11 or 12. So the fact they're only doing 10 really shows that I believe the Sphere, you know, whoever owns it, I don't necessarily know. It may be owned through the city. But it is certainly going to be a very strict. But as of right now, we have six fights announced. As we just mentioned, Ignacio Mahomedez, Manuel Torres. That fight could easily be on the main card, might I add. Ignacio, super talented, as I mentioned, that the spinning back kicks, knockouts are insane. And Manuel Torres, I mean, so well-rounded. I'm sure I could find the stats for Manuel Torres, but I think of his 15 wins, he has either all of them are finishes or 14 or 13 out of them are all finishes. It is incredible to see what he's accomplished. As for the other five fights besides that, you do have Ronaldo Rodriguez versus Ode Osborne. In the men's flyweight division, Ronaldo Rodriguez is Mexican. You're going to be seeing a lot of Mexican heritage fighters on this card, which I'm honestly all for. But I will say, you know, last time it was a fight night when we were doing that, and it worked. But for a pay-per-view, like, am I really going to be paying money to see these guys? I'm just being honest. You know, I'm just being honest when it comes to that. But Ode Osborne, I know he's desperately in need of a win. I kind of feel that they're feeding him to Ronaldo Rodriguez, if I'm being honest. I mean, dude's been submitted with a rear naked choke in his last two fights. So, Ronaldo Rodriguez, best of luck to you. As for other fights on this card, I mean, you have Irene Aldana versus Norma Dumont. Irene Aldana, the number 4 women's bantamweight in the world. Norma Dumont, the number 10. That fight could be on the main card. I certainly know it would be frowned upon. But Irene Aldana, Mexican heritage, great fighter. Honestly, giving her props, that is a very good fight for her. But that is a fight I could see on the main card. I could also see the moment is Torres fight, as I mentioned. I will say there are four more, so I'm just going to point out a couple names after we go through the set ones on who I think could be those final four fights. As well, another flyweight matchup between Edgar Cherez and Kevin Borjas. Kevin Borjas, I actually know, is from Peru. That's pretty crazy. But Edgar Cherez, Mexican, of course. He fought on the last Noche. Got a very awkward win on that. Actually, it might have been a no contest from what I remember. He got a win in the rematch against, oh my gosh, I can't think of his name. There's a holdup with him and his last opponent. But you know what? That's a decent fight. Definitely going to be on the first three or four prelims of the night. I guess there's only going to be five prelims, oddly. When you think about it like that, so there's going to be five prelims. I can guarantee you of the four fights I just listed, at least two of those will be on the prelims, almost all of them maybe. Another one that is definitely going to be on the prelims, a women's strawweight bout between Yasmin Jeraguay and Ketlin Souza. Two young, hungry up-and-comers. Yasmin Jeraguay is 12-1, I believe. Her only loss is by knockout. She has 7 knockouts on her record herself. Very talented. I believe she's 24, might be 25 now. Absolutely love her. I remember when she debuted in 2022, I was all for her. They gave her a co-main event spot, and everyone was like, oh, why is she in the co-main event? And she put on one of the greatest female fights I've ever seen against Yasmin Lucindo. So, happy to see that matchup. Could be opening the prelims, could be the third or fourth prelim, but we'll definitely be on the prelims. Ketlin Souza, I mean, I think she's Brazilian. I know she used to fight in Invicta FC, which is like an all-women's league. So, well, yeah, she'll be decent. But then the best fight announced so far, I think everyone can agree, is a middleweight matchup between Michelle Pereira and Anthony Hernandez. Michelle ranked number 13, Anthony Hernandez ranked number 14. This fight is going to be massive. Okay, let me tell you, this could open the main card. I think this might be your main card opener, in my opinion. But Michelle Pereira, at one point, was 0-2 in the UFC. At one point, was 0-2 in the UFC. He might have won his debut, actually, but he was on a two-fight losing streak. Okay, he had lost an awkward split decision to Tristan Connolly in 2019. And then 2020 started off with a DQ loss to Diego Sanchez. And then decided to not lose again. This dude has gone 4 years undefeated. I believe his win streak's up to, is it eight now? Is his win streak up to eight? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8-fight win streak. Mind you, so far in 2024, he's had 2 round one submissions. He's currently on a 3-fight round one finish streak. All of those around a minute. I mean, absolutely incredible. Michelle Pereira, I'm so excited to see where he goes. It almost kind of sucks that Michelle and Anthony have to fight each other, because I truly believe that either one of them could make the jump into the top 10, dare I even say top 5. But unfortunately, you know, they're going to have to, one's going down and one's going up. Michelle Pereira, jack of all trades. His opponent, Anthony Hernandez, who is 15-2, very impressive mixed martial arts record. He's currently on a little 5-fight win streak. Of those, four of them, I believe, are finishes. And he's really known for his submission game. I mean, he got a win earlier this year in February over Roman Kopilov. But like I said, this is a big jump up in competition for most definitely Anthony Hernandez compared to Michelle Pereira. So I will be curious to see how the jump is made. But if Anthony Hernandez can get to the ground, I can easily see him submitting Michelle Pereira. But I think on the feet, and even when it comes to submissions, Michelle Pereira is very, very dangerous. So that fight, I can guarantee you, will be on the main card. There's just no way that goes to the prelims. If anything, it's just the other 5 that I'm kind of curious about. So that brings me to my next point, and that is what could be the other 4 fights we see. Well, we're going to talk about in just a second the rest of the pay-per-view schedule for the rest of 2024. And one thing that has been circulating around is if Sean O'Malley versus Merab or Ia Topuria versus Max Holloway is going to be the main event of this card, or even if both of them are going to be on here. And honestly, either of those could be true, but I think the kind of concurrent rumor, what's looking like is lined up behind the scenes, is that Sean O'Malley versus Merab Dvoishvili, the number one bantamweight contender, is going to be the main event for the Sphere. And what we'll bring up again in just a moment, Ia Topuria versus Max Holloway will be the UFC 307 main event in October. So Sean O'Malley, Merab, that's probably going to be your 7th fight of the 10. I definitely support it. I mean, both these guys are super over. Sean O'Malley main eventing the Sphere makes sense. And Merab is oddly big in the Mexican community. I want you all to know, Merab is pretty big with the Mexican community. He always wears the sombrero and waves the flag around. He wears like a poncho. Super entertaining. I'm excited to see that fight back. I'm pretty sure that fight is going to be going down there. In terms of what other fighters could we see on there, we'll mention a couple of big Mexican fighters. You know, Brandon Moreno, obviously the former flyweight champion, currently ranked number 2. He has no opponent unless they do Brandon Moreno versus Tetsuro Taira on super short notice. And that would be a main card fight, but I just do not see that. I just do not see that fight taking place. At bantamweight, you're the only real Mexican fighter as closest you're going to get is probably going to be Merab Dvoishvili. Let me just tell you that. But we go to featherweight, and Diego Lopez, ranked number 12, I'm pretty sure is getting a fight on here. I don't know if he's rematching Dan Ige, taking on the number 3 ranked Brian Ortega, taking on Yair Rodriguez. I think that would be a great fight. Taking on Josh Emmett, taking on Aljamain Sterling. I think there's a lot of options for Diego Lopez, but I can guarantee Diego Lopez is going to be on this card. I can't guarantee if Yair Rodriguez or Brian Ortega is going to be, just because there's not really many opponents. I mean, Leron Murphy could take on either of them. Brian Ortega also mentioned going up to lightweight, but I believe Diego Lopez will fulfill that final spot. And I know some people are not final spot, but one of the final 3 spots. And I know a lot of people have been mentioning Aljamain Sterling, so that could be the 8th fight that we see. So that will leave us with 2 more. Like I said, Yair Rodriguez, a potential name. What's his face? Brian Ortega, potential name. you know, at lightweight, there really isn't any Mexican fighters. I think they're kind of going to be shuffled around to different cards. Same goes for the welterweights. Middleweights, I mean, you got Anthony Hernandez on there. He's got Mexican heritage. There's that. The light heavyweights, nothing really. I don't even have to look at the heavyweights. I already know. But I do believe the co-main event will be Alexa Grasso fulfilling that ninth spot. Alexa Grasso, of course, she main evented UFC Noche last year. Picked up a retained her belt through a draw against Valentina. But the consensus kind of is that Alexa is not facing Valentina for some reason. I don't know if Valentina Shevchenko doesn't want to not have home field advantage for some reason, like how Alexa technically has home field advantage with the UFC Noche fans. So I'm thinking number two ranked, Manon Fiorot, going to be the potential opponent. I think it makes sense. It'd be 2 weeks before Paris. I mean, if she wins the belt and shows up to Paris with it, she would be so over. Of course, the UFC's going back to Paris September 28th. So, I mean, that could be an option. Other than that, that's pretty much the only option. It'd be Manon Fiorot or Valentina Shevchenko. And leaving that, we would be at 9 fights. So, for that 10th, I mean, I doubt you're going to see Tracy Cortez back in action. I don't really know. Lots up in the air. There's 4 more spots. I can guarantee you're going to see Alexa Grasso. I can guarantee you're going to see Sean O'Malley versus Merab. I can guarantee you're going to see Diego Lopez. So that just comes down to that 4th spot. Will Brandon Moreno be there? Will Yair? Will Brian Ortega? I don't know, but UFC Noche going down September 24th. Exciting stuff there. But throughout the rest of the year, there's a lot more events that we have to talk about. So I think we're just going to touch on pay-per-views more likely for this, just because, I mean, there's going to be a lot more events to round out the final 4 or 5 months of the year. So we'll just look at the pay-per-views, just kind of give our thoughts. Let's get right after it. All right, UFC 304, of course, your final pay-per-view to round out July. Leon Edwards, Bilal Muhammad, the rematch there. And Tom Aspinall, Curtis Blaydes, the rematch there. Pretty funny. They're both rematches, but that's going to be an absolutely ridiculous pay-per-view. I'm super excited for that. This card for UK fans is ridiculously good. Ridiculously good. I mean, from top to bottom, I mean, you're getting Christian Leroy Duncan's against Gregory Rodriguez on the early prelims. You're getting on the regular prelims the undefeated McParkin against Lucas Brzezik. You're getting Molly McCann's on there. You're getting Nathaniel Wood. It's legit. And this main card is utterly insane. We kick it off. Arnold Allen versus Giga Chikadze, the number 6 and the number 10 featherweights in the world. I mean, come on. Come on. After that, Muhammad Mokaev, Manel Cape, the number 6 and the number 8 flyweights in the world. Winner of that's getting the next title shot. Winner of that's getting the next title shot. So that's going to be ridiculous. Then you have Paddy Pimblett versus Bobby Green. We finally see, can Paddy Pimblett hang with the big dogs? And by the way, Bobby Green isn't even that big of a dog, if you know what I'm saying. That should be interesting. But the main thing I wanted to touch on for all of these is what will be the main event. And this is technically a 2-fight main event, if you will. Tom Aspinall, your interim champion at heavyweight. Now, I won't lie, I think a lot of people, including myself, see him as the real champion, not Jon Jones, since Jon Jones continues to get arrested, get injured, and not defend his belt. And all he wants to do is fight Stipe, who by the time they fight, it will have been, I'm pretty sure, over 3.5 years. Oh, that's just insane to admit. But Tom Aspinall, dude, is so fun to watch. I mean, I think all but one of his UFC fights have ended in round one. The only man to technically beat him is Curtis Blaydes. He did, like, pull his knee 15 seconds in, so I don't really think we should hold that against Tom Aspinall. But I'll definitely be riding with Tom Aspinall in this one. And let's say Tom Aspinall wins. Let's say Curtis Blaydes wins. The winner of that has a date with Jon Jones in the future. Or if not, if they have a date, they're just going to be crowned your next champion. I don't know how it's going to work. As for the main event, Leon Edwards, Bilal Muhammad, they have a rematch. Leon Edwards, your number 4 pound-for-pound fighter on the planet. Bilal Muhammad, somehow the number 2 contender in the world. I don't know how he fooled everyone to get there. But is that a solid main event? I don't know. Bilal Muhammad really has no hype around him. Leon Edwards trying to cement his legacy. If you lose to Bilal Muhammad, you will get clowned forever, Leon. The sake of your manlyhood is riding on the line in this one. But I do think Leon Edwards will get this done. However, I have been not so hot on my pay-per-view predictions. We've gotten the last 3 wrong. You know, I've been picking with my heart. For this one, I could honestly care less what happened. So, UFC 304, super excited for that. Going down in Manchester, England, July 27th. August, I mean, we go to Abu Dhabi for a banger event August 3rd. We're back at the Apex August 10th. And then August 18th, I actually think it's the 17th. I think they're going off of Australia time. We have UFC 305, or the grudge match between DDP, Driscus Duplessis, as he takes on Adesanya Israel. Adesanya, his first fight since losing the belt a year ago. I'm curious to see how this one takes place. DDP, since the start of the year, I mean, all he's done is fight Sean Strickland, won the belt from him. And I think it would be pretty funny if Adesanya won this right back after losing it to Sean Strickland. There's this weird triangle where Driscus can beat Sean, Sean can beat Izzy, and Izzy can beat Driscus. I can easily see that happening. But I do think Duplessis is very underrated. I don't think he's given enough props for his abilities. And I do think he beats Adesanya in this event in Adesanya's home nation of Perth, Australia. So there's that. But there's a bunch of other good fights in here. Kaikar, Francis Versig, two top five flyweights. That's a banger. Tai Tuivasa needs it's a winner go home situation for him against Jairzinho Rozenstruik. Ain't no easy comments. Li Jingliang's 2-year return as he takes on the absolute killer that is Carlos Prates. Yosef Justin Taffa's brother, Junior Taffa, taking on Johnny Walker's brother, Walter Walker. Casey O'Neill's back. Joshua Kulabo's back. Jack Jenkins back. Tom Nolan's back. UFC 305 is loaded. Just talked about UFC 306. Going to be seeing Sean O'Malley versus Rob Dovashelli most likely, as well Alexa Grasso defending against what my guess is going to be Manafiora. That's going to be my guess, Manafiora. That's probably my best guess. We then get into kind of the mystery territory here, okay? UFC 307, 8, 9, and 10. Who will be main eventing all four of those pay-per-views? So let's start out with UFC 307, which is confirmed for Salt Lake City, Utah. No idea how Salt Lake City gets all these freaking pay-per-views. I mean, come on. Why do they get so many events? Come to Minnesota, for goodness sakes. But in the main event, I think this is kind of the consensus, Ito Piura versus Max Holloway. I thought this was going to be at some giant arena in Spain, but no, it's going to be going to Salt Lake City, Utah. I mean, it makes sense. Kind of lines up with what the UFC was shooting for. I'd be very excited to see it, though. Very excited to see it. Max Holloway, of course, has been on the run of a lifetime. The only man to meet Max Holloway in the last, 5 years, I think, has been Alexander Volkanovski. I mean, I guess Dustin Poirier beat him in 2019, if you want to say that. But as far as featherweight goes, the only man to beat him has been Volkanovski. And Ito Piura, 14-0, undefeated, just knocked out Volkanovski, something Max Holloway could never do. The storyline for this just writes itself. Co-main event for this, Raquel Pantin will defend her women's bantamweight championship against Juliana Pena. Juliana Pena hasn't fought since July of 2022, where she lost to Amanda Nunes. Convincingly, I think she got 50-42 on my scorecard. And Raquel Pantin won a boring decision to win the belt. So no hype there. Other than that, no fights announced, but that date for that is October 5th, which does mean we have a 2-pay-per-view October, which is just amazing. Who doesn't love a 2-pay-per-view October, as we are going to Abu Dhabi in October? October 26th, we'll be going back to Abu Dhabi. And there's actually a confirmed fight for this event. Ciryl Gane versus Alexander Volkov. I mean, come on. That could be a co-main event right there. But I do think UFC 308 is going to be one of the biggest UFC events of the year. I think they're going to load it up. You're also going to see Hamzat Chimaev on there. But this is kind of aligning for a 2-title fight card. I don't know if this is going to be true. I could easily see one of these two fights staying on here and the other being moved to UFC 310. But there is potential. We see Alex Pereira make his third step in the octagon for 2024 as he fights the number 2 ranked contender, Magomed Ankalaev. I truly believe that is a real possibility. Another possibility, Islam Makhachev in the highly anticipated rematch with the number 1 ranked contender, Armin Sarukian. I think both of those events could go down on UFC 308. They could save it for 310. We're going to talk about 310 in mere minutes, but that would be absolutely massive. I mean, like I said, Hamzat's probably going to be on there. You already have Ciryl Gane, Alexander Volkov. Umar Nurmagomedov, I'm sure, might want to make a turnaround or something. Going to be insane. UFC 308 could be the biggest card of the year. We then go to UFC 309, which is targeted for Madison Square Garden. And for the moment, I mean, John Jones is supposed to fight Stipe Miocic. I mean, that's been the word. That's what we've all heard. And will that transpire? I don't know, but I surely hope it does. Stipe is all the way down to the number six contender in the world. Stipe Miocic hasn't won since 2020, and Jon Jones has one win since 2020. And that's against, what's-his-face, Shogun. So there's that. I was talking about 310 Islam or Alex Pereira stepping in. Alex Pereira versus Magomedov could maybe save this card. I mean, Alex Pereira is known for saving cards. He saved Jon Jones' last fight card last November, and he saved Conor McGregor's card this summer. So I don't know who else. DDP is probably going to be a bit banged up. I don't really know if Leon Edwards versus Shavkat will happen this year. So a lot of stuff could transpire, but let's go with the optimistic approach that Jon Jones fights on here, and I'm just going to assume they give us Zhang Weili versus Tatiana Suarez as the co-main event or something for the women's strawweight belt. And that brings us to UFC 310 in December. Don't know a specific date. It's usually the 2nd or 3rd December of the month. 2nd or 3rd Saturday of December. And I mean, I think it's they're going to try and do Conor McGregor versus Michael Chandler. I think they're still going to try and do it one last attempt. If it's booked and it falls through, I don't think they do it again. But if they don't even try and book it, then it could be your January, February, or March card for 2025. But I hope that takes place. I can't really, you know, give any information because there really isn't any with Conor McGregor. It's pretty much always up in the air. But McGregor versus Chandler for UFC 310 would be massive. So that's what the rest of 2024 is shaping up to be as far as the title picture goes. And I'm excited. I hope all those fights take place and that we just have an amazing rest of the year. I'll tell you how else you can have an amazing rest of the year, and that's by reading a book that could potentially change your life. We've been on this series almost for a while now of me reading books, me giving reviews of books. It wasn't but a couple episodes ago I listed like 8 books to change your life or something, and I wish I would have listed this one. I wish I would have read it in time. Baby Steps Millionaires by Dave Ramsey, How Ordinary People Built Extraordinary Wealth, and How You Can Too. Dave Ramsey, legendary financial consultant. He knows what to do with your money. He's helped so many people get out of like thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt. He is great at what he does, and he does it all through God. It is absolutely amazing. I read this book. I took a bunch of notes, and there's so much that I'm not even going to be able to fit in. Like, this book has so much information that I couldn't fit it all onto my notes, but I have enough to talk about here on the podcast. I've been excited to do it. Let's dive into how to use the baby steps to become a millionaire. Alrighty, so the whole essence of Baby Steps Millionaires, guys, is to teach you guys how to build wealth. I mean, who doesn't want to build wealth? Who doesn't want financial freedom? I know I do. I know Zachary Ruger does. I know I want to be a rich millionaire. Living on my yacht, having my kids play with Gucci, I don't know, dinosaurs or whatever. I don't know. But Baby Steps Millionaires, the book starts out chapter 1, and it poses the question, can anyone become a millionaire? And it says, you can do this. Of course you become a millionaire, all right? You reap what you sow. And if you reap enough, you can become a millionaire. And the whole thing about a millionaire is kind of, what is a millionaire? A millionaire is someone with a net worth of $1 million or more, exactly $1 million or more. And that that can be tied up in a number of things, your assets, minus your liabilities, equal your net worth. So what you own is your assets versus what you will owe, most likely through taxes and you know, liabilities or what you kind of put into businesses, put into majority of things. I mean, a liability could be the time I've spent with this podcast. The assets could have been all the fans I've gained, and you know, that kind of comes out to what is the worth of the podcast. Kind of a terrible example there, but I think you kind of get it. Becoming a millionaire is a math formula, okay? And the average time it takes is 17 years. I will say the one thing with this book is they proved all their statistics in this. I mean, there's 100 pages at the end where it goes over all these, you know, testing they did, all these surveys they did. So every statistic and data point from this book is accurate and proven. And I think that's what really speaks to the reliability of the Baby Steps Millionaires. Everyday Millionaire started from the Baby Steps. They started from Everyday Millionaire started from nothing with no inheritance. That's what my notes. Some guys, I want to let you know when I'm reading my notes, sometimes my handwriting can be a bit sketchy. But yeah, so you can be an Everyday Millionaire. You can go from nothing or no inheritance and make some money. And that's kind of where I'm at. I'd be an Everyday Millionaire. You know, obviously I'll get an inheritance, but I don't think my folks are going anywhere soon. So we're going to be a self-made millionaire for sure. So you keep hearing me say the baby steps. There are several baby steps. Let's go through all of them. There's kind of a little bit of a segue when he goes through each one. So the first baby step, this is all according to Dave Ramsey. You know, it worked for him. It's worked for millions of others. It'll work for you. The first one is to save $1,000 for your starter emergency fund. You always need an emergency fund. And thank goodness I have at least $1,000. I'm blessed to have more than that. But I mean, it's very important to have an emergency fund. You never know when something will happen. Your car will break down. You get an injury. Something breaks at your house. You always need that extra lying around money. And that's the first baby step. So save up $1,000 and then you'll be through the first baby step. But that's all in your emergency fund. So you actually need to have that in its own separate fund. The second step, pay off all your debt except for your house. Now, I want you to mind you, some people listening to this, this may directly apply to them. Others, they may not have a house yet. They may not have kids. They may not have any of that. So, you know, you might even be ahead of the game with that. But yes, the second baby step is to pay off all your debt. You can't have any debt except for that on your house, you know, with your mortgage and such. Baby step three is to save 3 to 6 months of expenses in a fully funded emergency fund. So baby step three, you know, you're starting to get some more wealth in that just through working, you know, jobs and stuff like that. So then you'll have up to 3 to 6 months of your expenses in an emergency fund so you can be prepared for something more drastic, you know, natural disasters and stuff. And those first three baby steps are your 100-meter dash. That's your 100-meter dash. When it comes to the mile, that's where the rest of the baby steps come into play. So chapter three kicked off, how to become a baby steps millionaire. Okay, so there's sprinters and there's marathon runners, okay? And they're very unique, respectfully. So, you know, some people think a sprinter could run a marathon and some people think people could run a marathon could be a sprinter. I mean, Dave Ramsey used the comparison of the man who ran the first, like, the fastest marathon, or was it like 26 miles? He ran it in like under 2 hours or something like that. And then he compared it to a sprinter like Usain Bolt, who could run 100 meters in 7 seconds. And he said, you swap them around, they won't even be able to touch one another. So it's kind of, you know, using the baby steps, you know, for some people, it's going to be a bit different than others. It just kind of all depends on your skills. So steps 4 to 7 will start to turn your intensity into intentionality. So the intensity that you go through 1 through 3 will then be turned into intentionality. So you'll have intention with what to do with your money and how to gain more of it. Baby step 4, invest 15% of pre-tax household income into a retirement investments. All right. So 15% of your household income before tax will be going into retirement investments, because you have to think about retirement. I know that's tough for me, 21-year-old. I want to go rule the world. But, you know, I hear from my grandparents, hear from my parents, hear from all adults around the world. 40 years will go by in a blink of an eye. And then you'll kind of be like, shoot, what do? I don't have any money. I have to keep working. You really have to start being proactive about that. I know for a fact I have to start thinking about opening a retirement account and starting to put some money into that. Match beats Roth beats traditional. That is the direction it said. Match beats Roth beats traditional. And that was in terms of investing into accounts, match account, Roth IRA, and of course a traditional retirement account. So that's just some information to keep in mind. You know, like I said, the book explains a lot more than I do. I just write down little tidbits when I'm reading it. That's kind of what I've accumulated here on my 5 or 6 pages of notes that I have. But very good to know this stuff. I evenly invest my personal retirement in 4 types of funds, Dave Ramsey says. So part of that, 15% of his pre-tax household income that he's putting into his investments, you know, that 15% is then broken up out of the 15%, that set number, there's 100% of that number. That number is broken up into 4 different 25% categories. So 25% goes in growth and income. So that's going to be in large cap or large value funds, blue chirp, dividend income, equity income. 25% goes in the big boys, okay? 25% will go into growth, okay? This will be a mid-level investment, you know, equity, growth. You know, it's all about, this will be something that grows. Another 25% in aggressive growth. These are large companies based in emerging markets. So it's very cool that I had an international business course and I learned about emerging markets, and then I read it in this book and I'm like, I know what an emerging market is, you know? Very fun. And the final 25% will go into an international investment, foreign, overseas. It's not a world or global investment. It's an international investment. There's little differences. You gotta learn all the terms. The secret to doing this, the secret is to actually invest. And this is what I'm running into. You know, I'm reading all these books, and I'm kind of busy. You know, I work. I'm up at 4:30 going to the gym. I work 8 to 5. I get home at 5:30. I eat dinner. It's already 6. You know, sometimes I gotta hang with the girlfriend. Sometimes working on the podcast. There's not a lot of time. But I know once college kicks back up, I oddly have more time. I don't know. Senior year, I'm gonna be actually pretty busy. I've been very proactive in joining stuff, but I mean, gotta actually invest. That's something I'm definitely going to be doing as I want to become a Baby Steps millionaire. Get an advisor. Find an advisor. Okay, that's very important. You need people that have already been there, done that, to give you financial advice and tell you where to invest your money. Because I know a lot of people that go in blind. Never works out for them. You know, it may suck, you know, having to pay the advisor. But like I said, you know, the more money you're usually giving these guys, you know, usually they're giving you good advice that'll give a return on your investment. Be a glass half full. 70% of rain means 30% sunny. That is the mindset you have to have. That is the mindset you have to have. That's what Dave Ramsey said his mindset is. You got to be a glass half full, you know. And I think about that when you see rain and says, oh, it's going to be raining 90%. You got to counteract your buddy and go, hey, 10% of that, 10% chance we're going to have sun. And I really love that. I believe a lot of the things you do in life are going to be mindset-based. And, I mean, reading Atomic Habits, reading the 48 Laws of Power, reading Think and Grow Rich, reading You're a Badass Every Day. I mean, all these books, they really apply to your mindset. But like I said, another part of the mindset is actually investing, actually getting after it. So we get into the fifth baby step, which is save for your kids' college fund. Like I said, this could be when you have kids one day, you know, even before they're born. You're going to want to send them to college. I know my parents did. It's been the biggest blessing and one of my goals, not to, hopefully they don't listen to this episode, but one of my goals is to actually pay them back with a check for how much my college cost, which I think will just be an amazing. I'm going to do that one day. It's one of my goals. And, you know, for this baby step, you know, you got to start saving for your kids' college fund, right? That's how you do it. Baby step 6, pay off your house early, okay? Pay off your house early. 67% of millionaires have a paid off home. And when people think millionaires, they're going to start thinking like the Kardashians, you know, Eminem, Rihanna, all these sports athletes. But no, you'd be surprised how many of your next door neighbors are millionaires. And they live in an average house just like you. So paying off your house early gets rid of that burden. I know my parents didn't necessarily pay their house off early, but they were able to do it in, I believe it was 17 years, 16 years or something like that, something incredible. And it's very good. Then you don't have that burden anymore about worrying, of getting kicked out of your house. And the final baby step 7 is to build wealth and give. Okay, build wealth, continue to use your assets from your investments, continue to work, continue to find ways to make money, and then give back, you know. Give to a charity, give to your friends, give to your family, give to the church, give to any groups you belong to. Giving will return. You'd be surprised. I know my grandfather has a decent amount of money. He's a self-earned man. You know, I'm talking, he was content with working in a Kellogg's mill or something back in the 50s and 60s his whole life. His wife said, you know what, I'm either going to leave you or you're going to get a new job, all right? And he decided to become a cop. Since then, worked his way all throughout that, joined real estate, made tons of money in that, and is just, he gives all the time, and it is come back onto him tenfold, all right? So when you give, you see a lot come back in return, which I think is very important. That's why it is the 7th baby step. The 4th chapter in this book was titled, A Millionaire is Not a Billionaire. It compared Mount Everest to Clingman's Dome. Mount Everest is the king of the mountains. Clingman's Dome is a challenging mountain, but doable. It kind of brought up Jeff Bezos, Mark Cuban, where Jeff Bezos spent $65 million to build a clock inside of a abandoned mountain or something, and every 10,000 years it'll ring or something. Jeff Bezos can go anywhere and buy anything. He has million-dollar yachts. He has million-dollar planes. He can do whatever. The average millionaire is not going to be able to do that. Okay, you know, Dave Ramsey uses the term uber wealthy, uber wealthy. They can spend their money however they want. Okay, and I mean, some people want to be that. You know, I'm sure we all want to be billionaires at heart, you know, the idea of it. But a millionaire is becoming a millionaire is much more easy to do, much more accessible. It's easier to do for you than becoming a billionaire. And you're everyday millionaires, you know, you're going to be able to go out to some nicer places. buy a fancier car, buy your kids more gifts, you're not going to be able to buy a private plane. You're not going to have a giant yacht. You may have a yacht, but you're not going to have a $1 million yacht, okay? That's just what you want to kind of get across, right? The mindset here with Baby Steps Billionaires is not to become a billionaire. No, there's other things, right? I think when you want to become a billionaire, it kind of becomes your life goal where everything else is put to the side. I mean, a lot of these billionaires, you see that they found their families later in life. They certainly, there's always a catch with a lot of billionaires. But one thing to know is that wealth does not make you evil, okay? Wealth does not make you evil. It's what you do with it, okay? Chapter 5 is belief versus barriers. So don't quit before you start. Of course, everything's always rough at first. All right, we should know this. We live on Earth. We've dealt with all this. Don't quit before you start at this. Belief matters and hope matters. Believing you can do it and having some hope that it'll work. I mean, life following the Lord. That's faith. That's faith right there. Focus on the finish line. Don't let not starting hold you back. Okay, you got to start. Focus on the finish line. Think with the end in mind, you know, think with the end in mind. One of the 7 habits of highly successful people is if you think with the end in mind, if you picture it done, then you can go and attack it and complete it. You have to believe it will work. You have to believe what you're doing will work, will pay off. And that's the compound effect. I love referencing other books I've read. It's so fun. If you say it will happen, it will happen. All right. Say it will happen and it will. It's pretty crazy. I don't know. I had this example the other day where I was talking with people at work about fly fishing. And I was like, oh, that's so weird. I've never really heard anyone talk about fly fishing before. And I have this little devotional book that I hadn't read in a couple weeks, I'd say. Every day it has like this little story and then like a big biblical verse that goes with it. And after not opening it for weeks, I opened it and it was about a fly fishing analogy. Is it an analogy? Gosh, I guess I'm dyslexic or something. It was a comparison, to better say, from the Bible to fly fishing. And I just thought that was kind of interesting. You know, people call it coincidence. I call it God. Just certain interesting things there when you say something and it comes into fruition. And, you know, I told myself I was going to become president of Marketing Club. And lo and behold, I became president of Marketing Club. Said I was going to get an internship this summer. I did. Said I was going to start a podcast. I did. I say a lot of things and they happen. It's powerful. 33% of millionaires never had a 6-figure household income. Isn't that pretty interesting? About a third of all millionaires don't make 6 figures a year. Them and their spouse don't make 6 figures a year. Now, they could be in the 50K, 60K, 70K, 80K, even 90K. They're all under 100K. Okay. They follow the baby steps. They invest. They do what they need to do. And it pays off. And they can retire and be happy. Your life today should be a reflection of what you wanted yesterday. Your life today should be a reflection of what you wanted yesterday. Okay. I think about this all the time when I do certain actions and I think, okay, the me of yesterday, would I have wanted my future me to do that? And the me now, will my future me be proud of me? All right. You always have to think about that. You know, the world is much more complex at times than we think it is. And at times it's also more laid back. Don't we think it is? But you have to want it. You have to want to become a millionaire to do it. And sure as hell I want it. Sure as hell I want it. Moving on. Be a victor, not a victim. You have what you want. You have what you want. A lot of people have what they want and don't even realize it. And they are a lot more blessed than they realize. You know, people say you want a big house. You'd be surprised how big your house is compared to others. You know, and I know people say like, oh, you know, comparison is the death of creativity or something. But, you know, you have to realize you're a lot more blessed. You know, they're thinking, okay, you know, I want, you know, this expensive car. Some people look at your car and wish they had it. Okay, some people look at your little Equinox, look at your little Subaru and go, okay, I wish I had that. Maybe not the Subaru. Some people look at the clothes you got when you're looking at other people's clothes, right? We're always comparing each other, all right? We're always comparing what we have to each other. People are believing in the wrong things nowadays. Dave Ramsey talks about, I think that's really important, to get across is that we believe in a lot of things. We look at sex, drugs, partying. And I mean, I get sucked into that. I get sucked into the whole partying generation thing and you really have to focus. You have to, you know, we're focused on the wrong things nowadays. You have to ignore the irrelevant. There's so many irrelevant things in the world. Social media, perfect example of that, you know, in social media, it's done wonders. It's brought me so many relationships. It's helped me create things, learn things, see things. And at the same time, I question at times why I'm on my phone all day and it just sucks you in. Okay. It just sucks you in. This was a great quote from C.S. Lewis in the book. You can't go back and change the beginning, that you can start where you are and change the end. I mean, come on. Come on, I got to put that on my wall as well. You can't go back and change the beginning, but you can start where you are and change the end. It's never too late. It's never too late. Did you know Morgan Freeman didn't get into acting until he was in his 60s? His 60s. Now look at him in his 80s. Millionaire. Renowned movies. Amazing. It's never too late. It doesn't matter when you start, as long as you do start. You are who you hang out with is another thing they talked about. I know that's tough to hear. I know that's tough for me. I sometimes assess who I hang out with, and then I kind of put that in perspective where I wonder, am I being a good role model for the people that hang out with me? You know, and am I being an example that people can look at and go, okay, maybe Jimmy and Johnny aren't the best to hang out with, but when I hang out with Zach, you know, he's a great example. Am I being that example? You know, I think that's a great perspective to take when you think about that. They kind of talked about how being broke is real, but being poor is just a state of mind. You know, that's tough to swallow. That's tough to swallow because a lot of people think, yeah, me and my family are poor. Well, are you guys trying to get out of becoming poor? You know, that's easy to come from someone who's not really poor at the moment. But Dave Ramsey talked about, you know, he was dead broke. He had zero money. If you read about Dave Ramsey's story, he basically got kind of fooled by this real estate guy, and he earned all his money, not really through a bad way, but he didn't earn it the best way. He kind of earned it the back road way, and he lost all of it, and he was dead broke. But, you know, he said, he kind of assessed, you know, I don't want to be poor. You know, I'm broke, but I don't want to be poor. And he worked his way back. So saying poor is a state of mind is tough to hear, but you'll read it in almost every book that wants to better you. You'll read in almost all of those. Great affirmation for you guys is I control my destiny. You know, I control where I go. There's spiritual forces helping me, but ultimately they're going to leave it up to you to decide where it goes. Have a belief state of mind, you could say. Have a belief state of mind. Always believe in. Conceive, believe, achieve. A little Luke Rockhold quote. Choose to believe, man. Choose to believe, and it'll do wonders for you all. Chapter 6 was the quickest right way to $1 million. There's one right way and hundreds of wrong ways. Many stars in the NFL and NBA, they gave examples of who lost all their money. Lost all their money. And they talked about how easy it was. You know, you're a broke kid, you know, grew up in a poor community in, you know, Harlem. You get this star contract, you know, you make $7 million on your rookie deal, and you know, you decide to treat yourself. You know, you buy a house for yourself, you buy yourself a car, you buy yourself some clothes, and then, you know, you're going back, you're helping your cousin, you're helping your brothers, you're helping your mom, especially. A lot of the money goes towards the parents for how much they've done for them. And then, you know, the second season doesn't wind up too good. You know, you're still living that high-rise life. You know, it's what all the other big players do. By your fifth season, you know, you're out of the league. And those millions you made, they're all gone because they couldn't keep up with your lifestyle. It's crazy, and there's so many examples of that. But I think there's examples of players doing the right thing. You know, the best way to get rich quick is to get rich slow. You know, there's a lot of players where they invest their money. You know, they start businesses outside. And like I said, you know, there's a billionaire who Dave Ramsey spoke with, and the billionaire said the best book you could read is The Tortoise and the Hare. And why? Well, the hare, he's very ambitious. He wants to get after it, but he goes too fast. But the tortoise, he's smart. He knows if you play the long game, you'll make it there patiently, and you will do wonders more than the hare could accomplish. Part of this is admitting when you're wrong. I think this is tough for everyone, especially me. You know, I'm someone that really prides himself on being right all the time. So admitting when I'm wrong at times, it can be tough, honestly. And switching your focus, a great thing they touched on. You have to recalibrate your original approach. All right. How many of you, you know, you think the first way is going to be the best way? All right. They call it a rough draft for a reason. I know for a fact writing papers that it's always a tough pill to swallow when the rough draft doesn't go the right way. You just kind of got to recalibrate, rethink it, and get back after it and achieve success. Chapter 7 in the book, was this the final chapter? Might have been. Will Wealth Ruin My Kids was what it was called. Money is neutral and amoral, which is not good or bad, is the choices that you make with money that will determine if it is good or bad. I love this. I absolutely love this. I mean, I think my grandpa's a great example of this. He's got lots of money. He's never done a lick of bad things with it. Okay, maybe some gambling, maybe too much drinking at times. But I mean, donating to places, giving it to his grandkids, buying dinner all the time. And I mean, you know, he's a very God-focused man. I think when you're focused with God and when God gives you wealth, okay, and you're aware that God has given you this wealth, you're much more generous of what to do with it. But there's some people, you know, a lot of celebrities, you know, it's all about me, me, me. And you see all the bad stuff out there, all the secret meetings, all the child sacrifice, all the greed, all the, I mean, just a lot of sexual activities going on, sexual assaults, P. Diddy type activities. The money ruined them. And really, it came down to what they were choosing to do with it. Here's a great thing they point out: 5 behaviors to grow money smart kids. I know this is good. I know some kids who really need money help. There are 5 steps. There's working, giving, saving, spending, and stewardship. So work, commission over allowance. You should not be giving an allowance as a kid. Okay, you should be given a commission for the work you do. Not okay, you do all your chores, then you get your allowance, and then every Friday you get your allowance, and then okay, Timmy didn't do his chores, but you know, I feel like I should teach him that he'll still get his reward. No, chores are done, then you get paid. All right, that's how it should work. Giving is very important. Handling money God's way, something they really talk about. You know, don't close off your heart. Give it away. And it'll also help you appreciate your blessings by giving away some of your money, which is tough. I know when some people make it, they want to keep it all to themselves. Not me. You know, if I get a lot of money, I'm going to be leaving bigger tips for my waiters and waitresses. I'm going to be buying people better gifts than I could now. I'm excited. Once I get wealth one day, when I get wealth one day, I use those active words, I'm going to be very generous and definitely focus on giving and really instill that with my children one day. The third one, saving. Personal finances, 80% behavior and 20% head knowledge. Okay, you really have to be smart with your finances because a lot of the time you're just going to want to spend that money, but you have to learn to save. You have to learn to save, and it's tough at times, but you know, that'll happen. And part of saving, you know, the fourth one is spending. Okay, you know, broke equals broke, all right? Don't have sympathy for yourself, all right, when you're broke, right? You have to lock in, you know, 24-hour rule, all right? Go to sleep, wake up in the morning, all right? Don't try and rush into something right away at night. Sleep off the problem, assess, all right? But don't have sympathy for yourself when you're broke. Yeah, I get out of it, okay? These will all equip you to win, all right? All these will equip you to win and will equip your children to win. When it comes to spending, when it comes to saving, you have to compare, review, research. It's very important. You know, people who get mocked for like comparing a bunch of prices on orange juice at different stores, even saving a penny, you know, you still saved. Pretty incredible. And the last one, stewardship. I mean, that's God donating back to the church, making sure that money is going towards good things. Because usually, you know, the church is a physical example of God. Okay, the church is a living, breathing thing of God spiritually. But, you know, if you donate your money towards the church, towards being a steward, God will bless you beyond belief. And, you know, honestly, it makes me think, you know, when I'm at church sometimes, they pass that around. I shouldn't use the excuse that I am, you know, I'm a little poor college student because I'm not poor. You know what? I actually have more money than I had more money than I did when I was 10 years old, you know, if you want to think about it like that. Chapter 8, I knew there was another chapter. Wealth and the wealthy are not evil, all right? Don't be ashamed of wealth, all right? Do not be ashamed of wealth. Unequal is more fair than equal, which is tough to hear. Unequal is more fair than equal. And it's because you need inequality in the world. If everything was equal, there'd be no room to improve, no room for uniqueness. Everything would be the same. You'd have no one to chase, no goals to achieve if everything was the same. So unequal is actually pretty good. Talent, effort, intelligence aren't equal either. You know, as much as everyone tells you, you know, you won this participation trophy. No, you didn't. Little Susie was actually way better than you than swimming, all right? Little Johnny's faster than you, okay? You have to realize that you're going to have certain talents that are better than other people. You're going to put in more effort than other people. Some people are going to have more intelligence than you. You have to appreciate their differences and use people and let people use you for your talents, okay? Don't try and do everything. No government program can change your financial system, only you. This is very important with everything going on with COVID and, you know, the government giving out handouts. The government cannot change you, okay? It cannot change your financial situation. That's up to you. You have to lock in. You have to get after it. You have to improve your financial situation by using the baby steps. And that brings us to my final page of notes. Wow, we've been going almost like 30 minutes. Incredible. If you live in North America, you're actually richer than a majority of the world. I want you to think that there are people that live in huts and they look at trailer parks and they think this is the greatest thing ever. I wish I had that. You know? So North America, we're much more rich here. I mean, even some places in Mexico are much better than places in Africa and the Middle East. So you really have to appreciate what you have here. Your pursuit of wealth is moral, though. All right. Unselfish, not greedy, biblical. Okay. You just have to have those. You just have to have those traits. Okay. Be unselfish with your money. Don't be greedy with your money and give back to the Lord. And guess what? You'll realize your wealth is moral. Money isn't the problem. The love of money is. That's directly quoted in the Bible. That's directly said by a lot of people. People with money, you know, if you love your family, if you love what you do for work, money will come with that. But if you love money, bad things will follow. And remember to donate. Donate to a cause. Donate to people. Always do good things with your money. In chapter 9, Baby Step Millionaires in Every Neighborhood, this was the final chapter. And what I got, this was a great quote. The key is time in the market, not timing the market, okay? If you try and do the Dogecoin, if you try and do the Bitcoin where, you know, your NFTs, there's going to be the one or two people that make millions off of a quick timing the market, okay? The real people, the real everyday millionaires are keeping their money in the market, letting it saturate, letting it sit there. After 50, 40 years, they take it out, and holy cow, the interest is beyond anything comparable, okay? With hope, and this is kind of leads with hope we can have an abundant life, and you got to hope it'll all work out. And honestly, if you think it'll all work out, it usually does work out, all right? It starts with you, and you can do this, all right? And here's a, you know, here's a little affirmation for you. Better than I deserve. Better than I deserve. I'm doing better than I deserve. Okay. I'm doing much better than I deserve because, you know, none of us really deserve, you know, this amazing life because, you know, we live in a world of sin. And Dave Ramsey really talks about how Jesus is the key to all this. It's through him that Dave was able to accumulate all his fortune, help all these people. And I think that's very important. You know, you see all these rich ultra pastors around the world misspreading the word of God. It's kind of mixing everything up. You know, it's not a good thing. And Dave kind of reminds you, you know, if you put the Lord at the center of your goals, you know, he will help you. You know, he'll work side by side with you. And like I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of statistics in the back of the book. I started writing them down. I mean, they had thousands, hundreds of thousands of sampling for this book. I wrote down a couple, and then I was like, oh, I'll read out a bunch. And then I was like, okay, I'm not going to read 50 pages of stats. So here's just a couple that I wrote down to kind of round this out. Millionaires, on average, the average age in the United States is 63. The average age of the majority of millionaires is 63. Now, mind you, that the ones they sampled everyday ones, okay? So these were not inheritance babies. These were not rich people who got a bunch of funds. No, these were everyday people, and I don't think there were any under 24, okay? I don't think there were any other 24 in the ones they sampled, and they sampled like 100,000 people. When they became millionaires was between the ages of 45 to 54. So like I said, the baby steps, it's going to take 17 years. So, I mean, you start now at 20, like by 40, you could be a little baby step millionaire. The geography of the United States with the most millionaires, it's the South, 29%, the West, 28%, and the Midwest, 21%, which was unfortunate. It was unfortunate to see the Midwest was actually last or second to last. The top 10 states with the most millionaires per population, Minnesota, 2.19% of our population is millionaires. So pretty cool, at least for the one sampled, might add for the one sampled. The number one is actually Arizona. 3.78% of the population is millionaires. The lowest is Idaho, 50th out of all 50 states at 0.07%. The average income for these people, for the millionaire sampled, 35% of them was $50,000 to $75,000. Only 21% made $100,000 or more. And 55% of millionaires were A students, but only 36% of millionaires in the United States had a four-year degree for the sample they did with like 200,000 people or whatever. But this book was amazing, guys. I encourage everyone to go read it. I know I definitely want to get investing. I want to kick my future off, and I want to give my children an amazing childhood loaded with riches and glory. You know what I'm saying? I got to teach them how to be good. And when they're doing their little baby steps out the crib, I'll be doing my baby steps to become a millionaire, all right? Dave Ramsey, check his book out. I got it from the library, all right? You guys can get it from the library. Get it from Amazon. Give it a go. And as much as that was kind of our, you know, main surprise topic for the episode, we still have to talk about discussing film 10, top 10 new things in pop culture before we get into our UFC Vegas 94 predictions. But it's kind of hard to follow the baby steps millionaires. But let's check out 10 new things in the pop culture world. First off, Noah Hawley's Alien series has wrapped filming. It will be coming soon to FX. That's right. They're making an Alien series. Okay. Alien Romulus is coming out. By the way, we already mentioned on like a couple episodes ago, I rewatched all the Alien movies. They suck. They actually suck. They are brutal to watch. They are just kind of just like, I mean, that was just lame TV, if I'm being honest, but we'll see what happens. Number two, Glenn Powell is going back to UT Austin to finish his Spanish and Early American History degree. He said, "I'm obviously going to be coming in, zooming in for classes and whatnot, but I have to be back for the proctored exams." Good for him. Good for him. How about that? You know, he's a millionaire, movie star, going back to school, looking to get his Spanish and American History degree. It's a pretty interesting degree, American History degree. I don't know what to think about that. Number three, Michael Mann is currently writing the script for Heat 2. He hopes to begin filming the film at the end of, or end or beginning of 2025. Heat, a great film with, wasn't it De Niro? Was De Niro in that film? And oh my goodness, I can't remember his name. Who's the guy from Top Gun? He got like some disease or something. He was blonde. He was the Iceman. I have no idea. But Heat, great movie. I think it came out in the 90s. I really got to watch that. I actually really got to watch that film when I think about it. Number four, Nicolas Cage's next film, The Surfer, will release in 2025, according to Lionsgate. The film follows an Australian expat, I don't know what pat means, who buys his family's beach home but must go to war with a group of surfers who claim the beach for their own. Yeah, I would expect nothing less from a Nicolas Cage movie. That does not surprise me at all. Number five, Oppenheimer is now available on 4K UHD on sale for $15. Wow, you really want to buy Oppenheimer for $15? Why? Why? I would not buy Oppenheimer for a bucket of cheese. Okay, a bucket of cheese. Long Legs distributor Neon has acquired the rights to release Chris Stuckman's horror movie Shelby Oaks. The film follows a woman who searches for her sister, who became a paranormal investigator on YouTube after realizing the imaginary demon from their childhood may be real. Ugh, that's creepy. I don't like to mess around with demons and stuff. Bad, bad, bad. No, no, no. Number six, I'll say they're releasing so many images from this Wolverine and Deadpool film. I'm worried I'm going to see the whole film. Okay. They are releasing way too many snippets. I'm avoiding any more trailers now. It is getting out of control. Number seven, Anthony Hopkins recently said that why he's continuing to act at the age of 86. He said, "Even though I'm 86, I wake up in the morning and go, oh, I'm still here, and I have a sense of mischief about it." You know, Anthony Hopkins, I love him as an actor. He's amazing. Just incredible. Silence of the Lambs. Even like films like Transformers 5, he was an absolute stud in his acting skills there. I love him. Keep acting. Keep going, Anthony. Number eight, first look at Ben Stiller in David Gordon Green's Nutcrackers film, his first starring role in 7 years. The film follows a workaholic who suddenly becomes the caregiver for his four nephews after their parents die in an auto accident. How sad. Oh my goodness, that is so sad. But you know what? I'm happy to see Ben Stiller back in action. How about that? The last film he starred in was 2017. Wow. It's been a while. Number nine, Jack Black says all future creative plans for Tenacious D are on hold and the tour is canceled after comments were made by Kyle Gass, the guitar player from the film, about the Trump assassination. He basically said he wished the shooter would have hit Trump, and even Jack Black, who's a raging liberal, was kind of like, yeah, you shouldn't have said that, and now they've fired him, which is good. But Jack Black slowly becoming less likable day by day. And number 10, the final thing we can talk about for the top 10 new things in the pop culture world and the discussing film world, if you will. I don't even know. First look at Conclave from the director Edward Berger, who directed All Quiet on the Western Front. The film follows the death of a pope, the mysterious circumstances surrounding it, and the impending election of a new pope. Interesting. Vanity Fair released some images for that film. Will I see it? Will I see it? Probably not. I probably won't see it. But, you know what? It is what it is. So I don't have much to say at times when it comes to little movies like that. I'm very particular when it comes to my movies. I like a certain kind of movie. It honestly depends what mood I'm in. But I don't really know if I care for Pope movies. But hey, that's just me. and you can watch whatever you please. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, let's get into the main event of our episode, the final hoorah to cap it all off. I was hoping to finish recording this by 8 so I could watch The Bachelorette, but it looks like we're going to be going over 8 o'clock here as we have a lot of fights to talk about. We have 12 fights in total to talk about, 4 UFC Vegas 94, and I got to give my predictions, and I'm going to be honest, there is not really, all the odds are close on this one. I think the biggest favorite is -205. Like, this is all these fights are close. So UFC outdid themselves with matchmaking for this card. But yeah, I don't know. Let's just get right on into it. We'll see what we think. We'll give our thoughts and give you guys the locks to nail your predictions. Alrighty, guys, let's kick off the prelims with, I feel usually that we kick it off with some lighter weighted competitors, but no, we're starting with the big boys to get us going as Muhammad Usman takes on Thomas Pearson in a heavyweight matchup to kick off UFC Vegas 94. Let's get right into it. Muhammad the Motor Usman, of course, he is the younger brother of Kamaru Usman, one of the greatest welterweights of all time. Muhammad is 11-3. His opponent, Thomas the Train Pearson, one nickname, is 8-2. 6'2 to 6'1 gives Muhammad 1 inch in reach, and he has a notable 1 inch in height, and he has a notable 5 inches in reach, 79 inches, 74. Orthodox for Usman, southpaw for Thomas Pearson. Let's start out with Muhammad Usman. He's a -150 favorite for this matchup. 35 years old from Texas. Was born in Nigeria, same as his brother. Of his 11 wins, he has 4 KOs and 2 submissions. And of his 3 losses, he was submitted once, I believe, in the PFL, maybe a couple years ago. But as for his UFC run, he's 3-1. He is coming off a loss in March. He lost to Mick Parkin by unanimous decision. And before that, boring decision against Jake Collier, boring decision against Junior Tafa. I mean, his only really exciting moment was his knockout of Zach Pauga in August of 2022 to win the Ultimate Fighter season 30, I believe. So, I mean, Muhammad Usman has not correlated to the same level of stardom as Kamaru, his older brother. But, you know, he is still a powerhouse, is still a heavyweight. At 35 years old, he's kind of getting older, but I won't lie, that 35 to 40 range, them heavyweights, they can still bang. They can still bang, let me tell you that. So yeah, I mean, 6 of his 11 wins by finish as a heavyweight, that's not the best. His opponent, Thomas Pearson, the +125 underdog, 29 years old, is actually from Webster, Minnesota. I actually think he was born in Farmington, Minnesota, and is from Webster. I did pick him in his UFC debut back in February, and he lost, so I mean, it's kind of hard to pick him again. All 8 of his wins are by KO, most of them by ground and pound TKO, and his of his 2 losses, he of course lost to Jamal Pogues back in February, got outboxed on the feet. But his other loss, he actually got TKO'd. The only time he's been finished was by Waldo Cortez Acosta, heavyweight currently in the UFC. Pretty interesting. So Pearson, I saw him on Dana White's Contender Series. He got a submission in round number 2. That was last August. So I don't really know. I don't really know for this one. I don't expect too much. Also, if I'm being honest, these two just do not strike me as high-level heavyweights. They're definitely on the lower end. So, I mean, I could see Muhammad Usman maybe getting a little TKO. We might throw that into Verdict just to do that. Follow me on Verdict, official Zach Ruger. But we're going to pick Muhammad Usman. I just feel his abilities are a bit more than Thomas Pearson's. And it would be really surprising if Muhammad Usman lost this matchup. But like I said, the odds are even for all these fights. They're all toss-ups. But we're going to ride with the favorite, Muhammad Usman, in this matchup. Coming up next, women's flyweight action as Luiana Dread Carolina takes on Lucy Pudilova. Luiana Carolina is 10-4. Lucy Pudilova is 14-9. 5'8 to 5'6 gives Lucy Pudilova 2 inches in height. But Carolina, 69 to 67, has 2 inches in reach. Both women stand in the orthodox stance. Let's start off with Luiana Carolina, who's actually an underdog for this one, +100. Lucy Pudilova is -120. Luiana Carolina, 31 years old, from Sao Paulo, Brazil. Of her 10 victories, she has 3 KOs and 1 submission. Of those 4 losses, 2 of them she's been finished, and the other 2 have gone the distance. Currently on a little 2-fight win streak. Picked up a round 3 TKO with 8 seconds left in February, so did get her third career TKO. Good win for her. As far as her UFC run has gone, I mean, it's pretty, you know, mediocre. 5-3. Debut beat Priscilla Cachoeira in 2019. You know, got knee barred by Aranda Silva in 2020. Picked up two wins, one over Lupe Godinez in 2021. Got spinning back elbowed by Molly McCann in March of 2022. That is a notable KO. That is pretty gnarly. Lost a split decision to Joanne Wood in 2023 March. In July of 2023, beat Ivana Petrovic and, of course, beat Julia Stoyanenko in February. So, Ljubljana Karolina is so unpredictable. You'll never know what you're going to get. So we'll have to see. Her opponent, Lucy Pudilova, 30 years old, born in the Czech Republic, now is from Dublin, Ireland. She does train under the same head coaches, Conor McGregor and John Kavanaugh. Of her 14 wins, she has 3 KOs and 2 submissions. So 5 of 14 wins by finish are not the best. Of her 9 losses, she's only ever been finished once. That one time she was finished was by actually Valentina Shevchenko's younger sister, Antonia, in 2019. Lucy Pudilova, I mean, this has not been the best UFC career. This is crazy to me. I don't know how she's still in the company. She is actually 3-7 in the UFC. Notable, I mean, she's had a fight of the night split decision, lost to Irene Aldana in 2018. Went the distance against Liz Karamuchin, lost. Her last win was against Wu Yanan in 2022, got a round 2 TKO. Since then, split decision loss in April of last year to Jocelyn Edwards, and a split decision, or just a unanimous decision loss to Aline Perez in November. So Lucy Pudilova not really coming in with much momentum for this one. I mean, I think we ride with a little underdog action here. Ljubljana Karolina, she's coming in with a bit of momentum. She's kind of got the reach. I will say that the striking ability is clearly there, more so for Ljubljana Karolina. This is a coin flip. I'm going to say that for every single fight, but we are going to go with Ljubljana Karolina. First underdog in the night in the second fight. That's who we're going with. Keeping the action moving on the prelims. I believe it's a six main cards, what I think it is. We go to the men's lightweight division as Loic the Tajik Tank Radziboev takes on Trey Shamurai Ogden. Not Samurai, Shamurai. Interesting. Loic Radziboev is 18-5-1. Trey Ogden is 17-6 with one no contest. Both men are 5'11". Trey Ogden takes the advantage in a reach with 72 inches to 69. Both men stand in the orthodox fighting position. Loic the Tajik Tank Radziboev, he is the favorite at minus 150. 33 years old, born in Tajikistan, now lives and trains in Florida. Of those 18 wins, 8 KOs and 5 submissions. So that is pretty good. 13 of 18 wins by finish. Of those 5 losses, he's been KO'd only once, and that was actually in his second UFC fight against Matheus Rebecca. Loic, grappler at heart, can also strike as well. In March of last year, beat Esteban Ribovics in his debut. I mean, landed 11 takedowns, and after seeing what Esteban Ribovics did to Terrence McKinney, that is an impressive win. Of course, lost to Matheus Rebecca, but I mean, Matheus Rebecca was on a 19-fight win streak before that. And most recently, in March, got a round 3 knockout of Abdulkarim Al-Sawadi. So Loic is coming in with some momentum from Tajikistan. I know he's very proud about where he fights from. This is going to be a competitive fight. You know, he's a grappler. That's his specialty. His opponent, the plus 125 underdog, Trey Ogden, is also a grappler. 34 years old, from Kansas. Of his 17 wins, he has 11 submissions. That is absolutely insane. Of his 6 losses, he's been subbed 3 times. So all of his fights are won or lost on the ground. So far, he's gone the distance in every single fight so far in the UFC. He almost got his 12th career submission with a win over Nicholas Mota last November. Unfortunately, there was some weird thing where the ref stopped it prematurely. Mota was losing, though, so it should have counted. That was BS. Trey Ogden picked up a win over Kurt Holobow back in March. Not the most impressive. He's currently sitting at 2-2 with one no contest. So this will kind of be the judge if Trey Ogden still belongs in the UFC. Now, I've seen him land 3 takedowns in multiple fights, last 2 pretty much. I've seen him stand on the feet the whole time against Ignacio Bahomadez, who we mentioned earlier. I've seen him beat Daniel Zaluber, lose to Jordan Leavitt. I mean, you never know what you're going to get. So this is a very unpredictable matchup. I can't lie. It's hard to expect what you're going to see. But from what I've seen, Loic's biggest weakness is going to come down to the striking. And I just think he is far superior striking to Trey Ogden. Trey Ogden is one-dimensional. So, you know, if it gets to the ground, it's probably game over. But we're going to ride with Loic Radziboev in this one. Going to ride with Loic Radziboev. He is the favorite. And there's just something about the Tajikistan guys. I feel like they really fight with a passion, really fight to get the job done. I don't really want to say a finish, you know. So I'm just gonna say a little decision, you know, same as Louis Carolina, we'll go decision. I think for that Muhammad Usman fight, we'll do a round two TKO just to kind of spice it up, because I think I'm gonna be saying a lot of decisions for a majority of these fights. But I'm gonna be riding with Loic Radziboev. But Trey Ogden, not necessarily a hater of him. Keeping it moving, we head back to the women's flyweight division as we have a very good matchup here between Miranda Fear the Maverick and Dione the Witch Barbosa. That is a very weird nickname. Very, very weird nickname. I don't know how to feel about that. One of the biggest favorites on the card at minus 205 is Miranda Maverick. At 15-5, she is much more experienced than Dione Barbosa, who's 7-2. 5'6 to 5'3 does give the Witch 3 inches in height, and she has 1 inch in reach, 66 inches to 65. Dione, orthodox stance, southpaw for Miranda Maverick. And we'll start with Miranda Maverick, the favorite by far. Not too bad. In the UFC, I mean, they've come in pairs. Her winning has come in pairs. Two wins, two losses, two wins, one loss, two wins. So maybe this will string it together for a win, hopefully. I don't know. 27 years old. I do feel bad. She's from Denver. So no idea why she wasn't booked on the Denver card last weekend. Of those 15 wins, I mean, one KO, seven submissions. So much better on the feet. Of those five losses, never been finished. And she was actually supposed to fight Tracy Cortez on this card. So she was supposed to fight up. Instead, she'll be fighting down in Dione Barbosa. There's a reason she's minus 205. I mean, recently beat Andrea Lee in February. Before that, had a round 3 armbar against Priscilla Castroneda last July. So a while. Her only losses in the UFC, Jasmine Jasu Davicius, Erin Blanchfield, Macy Barber. Let me just remind you, that's the number 15, which she'll probably move up a bit once the rankings update. The number 4 and the number 3 women in the world. So Miranda Maverick has only fought the best, never been finished in the UFC. I mean, honestly, should have beaten Macy Barber in that 2021 fight, but she's coming in with some momentum, little 2-fight win streak. We'll see what she brings to the table. Her opponent, the plus 170 underdog, Dione the Witch Barbosa, hate that nickname, 32 years old, from Brazil. She's currently on a 4-fight win streak. Of those 7 wins, 3 submissions. She's only ever been KO'd once, and that was actually by Josiane Nunez. Josiane Nunez is actually not in the women's bantamweight rankings anymore, but she's in EA Sports UFC 5, which I find absolutely hilarious that they added her to the video game, which just, she has no hype behind her. But anyways, Dione Barbosa, 4-fight win streak, won on Dana White's Contender Series in September of 2023, got a round 1 armbar, good stuff there, won her debut in May against Ernesta Karaceke. Okay, in that fight, it would appear, you know, she likes grappling a bit more. It was hard to tell anything in that fight. All I know is Miranda Maverick is fighting top 15 women. She's not going to get tripped up here by Dione Barbosa. And I hate to get ahead of myself, but I actually might say Miranda Maverick back at it. How about a little round 2 submission? I'm confident Miranda Maverick will show that there are levels to this and get a dominant win here. Let's ride with it. Going from the girls to the boys, we head to the men's bantamweight division as Brian Boom Kelleher takes on Cody the Renegade Gibson. Brian Kelleher is 24-15. Wow, congratulations, Brian. This will be your 40th professional bout. His opponent, Cody Gibson, 20-10. So he's also had 30 professional bouts. Very impressive. 5'6 to 5'10 gives Cody 4 inches in height, and he has 5 inches in reach, 71 inches to 66. Brian Kelleher fights in a switch stance. Cody is more in the orthodox stance. The plus 190 underdog, Brian Kelleher, currently on a 3-fight losing streak, which isn't the hottest. 37-year-old from New York has 8 KOs and 10 submissions. So of those 24 wins, 8 15 finishes. He has been KO'd twice of his 15 losses, and he's been subbed 8 times. So, I mean, I don't want to say too much. Of those 40, what's going to be 40 professional bouts, only 11 of them have gone the distance. That's pretty crazy. Brian, like I said, 3-fight losing streak. He's been finished in round 1 in all of them. I do want to point out that those losses are to Umar Nurmagomedov, Mario Bautista, Cody Garbrandt, okay? His other UFC losses include Ricky Simone, Cody Stammen, Montel Jackson, John Lineker, Marlon Vera. Every single name I just listed is a legit competitor. Other than that, Brian Kelleher has beaten everyone else. He actually holds wins over Henan Barao, Ode Osborne, Kevin Krim, not really a notable name. But yeah, last win came in January of 2022. So this has been a long time coming. He was only able to get one fight in last year. That was in December, getting knocked out by Cody Garbrandt. So, Brian, I'll be rooting for you, but it's not going to be easy coming. No, no, no. He takes on Cody Gibson, who was the runner-up of the last season of The Ultimate Fighter, the minus 230 favorite. Whew, I think he is the biggest favorite on the card at minus 230. Cody Gibson, 36 years old, from Oklahoma. Of his 20 wins, he has 7 KOs and 4 submissions. Of those 10 losses, he's been submitted 4 times. Cody Gibson, as far as his UFC second run, the UFC is considered, he's 0-2. Was able to get wins on The Ultimate Fighter, but those are all exhibition. He originally had a stint from 2014 to 2015 where he went 1-3, including a decision loss to Aljamain Sterling. But came back after 8 years, had a fight of the night against Brad Katona in August. Last fought Miles Johns in March and just looked off in that fight. You know, got taken down, got outstruck on the feet. Miles Johns kind of just did whatever he wanted with him. Cody Gibson, I just do not feel is the UFC level. The Ultimate Fighters have not really done well since coming into the UFC. And Brian Keller, this is going to be his 40th professional bout. This is finally someone who's not a former champion, not in the top 10, top 15. So give me Brian Keller. And we're going to say by decision. I just feel like it's going to be a gritty win. This is a long time coming for Brian Keller. 2 years, over 2.5 years in the making. I'm really rooting for Brian to get it done. But like I said, you know, he's the biggest favorite on the card. Cody Gibson at minus 230. Brian Keller at a plus 190 is actually the biggest underdog. So, I mean, why not pick the biggest underdog? That's kind of exciting. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, that'll bring us into our final prelim of the evening as we'll go up from 135 to 145 for the men's featherweight division as Jeong Korean Tiger Lee, I freaking love this man, takes on Hyder the Hurricane Emil. This is going to be fireworks. Jeong Lee, 11-1. Hyder Emil, a perfect 9-0. 5'10 to 5'9 gives Jeong just 1 inch in height. He has 3 inches in reach, though, 73 inches to 70. An orthodox stance with that right hand for Lee. Hyder Emil prefers the switch stance going between that right and left. Let's kick it off with the Korean Tiger, Jeong Lee, the minus 185 favorite. 28 years old from South Korea. From here on out, I mean, we have a number of South Korean fighters. I think we have four, including Jeong. Very impressive. Jeong Lee, 8-fight win streak. Very incredible. Of those 11 wins, 4 KOs and 3 submissions. His one loss was by decision. Of course, came from the road to the UFC, had 2 round 1 finishes in there, 1 in 36 seconds, 1 in 42 seconds. Made his debut in February of 2023, earning a split decision win over Yiz Ha. Then finally debuted against Blake Builder in February of 2024. Did we need to do? Got some takedowns, outstruck Blake Builder, kind of just picked him apart, if I'm being honest. And Jeong Lee is coming to bring it again. The Korean Tiger, 28 years old, young and hungry for a win. Trying to bring back some South Korean flair to the UFC. His opponent, the plus 155 undefeated underdog, Hyder Emil. Hyder, of course, 9-0. I mean, he is 34 years old, though, so kind of an older rookie, if you want to call him that. From San Francisco, of those 9 wins, 5 KOs and 1 submission. Won on Dana White's Contender Series last August, then debuted in February with a round 2 TKO of Fern Garcia. I do want to say that Fern Garcia is 0-4 in the UFC, so I mean, Fern Garcia sucks. But I mean, Hyder Emil, 34 years old, he's clearly experienced, but I don't really know who you could put in front of me where I wouldn't pick Jeong Lee, and I'm going to pick a round 1 submission for Jeong Lee. His nickname, the Korean Tiger, is so badass. His skill set, from what I've seen on the road to the UFC, is very, very advanced. Now, you know what I'm saying. You know, all the odds are close on here, so Hyder Emil could easily pull out a little knockout. but I would prefer to go with Ji Young Lee. Okay, and I don't really know if I'm going to be picking any other South Korean fighters the rest of the evening. We'll see. You know, I don't really want to spoil any picks. I might, actually. But, you know, I definitely want to go with Ji Young Lee. And this one, I do think his grappling is a bit better when it comes down to the feet. That's where the fight's going to be made or break. We'll see what happens there. So, Ji Young Lee, lock him in as a favorite. With that, we move into the main card. As quickly as I mentioned, Korean fighters, they're just right here. And we're in the men's featherweight division still, as Doo Ho, the Korean Superboy Choi, takes on Bill Senior Perfecto Aljiu. Why do all the Korean fighters, South Korean fighters, have amazing nicknames? Is that just what the heck? Doo Ho Choi, the Korean Superboy, is 14-4-1. Bill Aljiu is 18-8. 6'5", 10", gives Bill 2 inches in height, and he has 3 inches in reach, 73 inches to 70. Switch stance for Bill, orthodox for Doo Ho Choi. And we're going to start with Doo Ho Choi, the Korean Superboy. +135 underdog. He is an underdog at 33 years old, of course, from South Korea. Of those 14 wins, 11 KOs and 1 submission. So, I mean, come on, six out of his 7 wins. I don't know why I divided that, but 12 of his 14 wins are by finish. If we go by percent to break it down, 6 out of 7 would be your percent. But I mean, he's been KO'd twice of those 4 losses. And unfortunately for Doo Ho Choi, it's been tough going. You know, he joins the UFC in 2014. From 2014 to 2016, gets 3 round 1 knockouts, two earning him performance bonuses. Then fights Cub Swanson in one of the greatest fights you'll ever see. Then fights Jeremy Stevens in 2018 in one of the better fights. Gets knocked out in round 2, shockingly. Then fights Charles Jourdain in 2019. Yet again, a fight that night gets TKO'd in round 2. Takes 4 years off. Comes back in February of 2023. Has a majority draw against Kyle Nelson. So Doo Ho Choi is nearing 10 years since he was in his prime. He was a young kid then. You know, inactivity has hurt him, but I do think, you know, this is a perfect opportunity for him against the guy in Bill Aljiu. And Bill, he is the -160 favorite, 35 years old from Pennsylvania. Of those 18 wins, 4 KOs and 7 submissions. Of those 8 losses, he's been KO'd once and subbed twice. He is, however, coming off of a TKO loss back in March. Kyle Nelson shockingly standing TKO'd him 4 minutes in round 1. It's kind of disputed. But I do think this is a perfect matchup here. And Bill, yet another guy, hit or miss when he's in the octagon. I mean, he's lost to Ricardo Lamas and Ricardo Ramos, not related. He has huge wins over Joe Henderson, Brito, and Herbert Burns. A loss to Andre Feely, win over Alexander Hernandez. That was actually his last win in October. But yeah, last fought in March, lost that fight. I do believe Bill might be better, but I mean, it's no fun. I really want to pick Doo Ho Choi. He's fun to play with in the UFC A Sports 5. Plus, he's an underdog. Give me Doo Ho Choi. And I feel Bill would be the safe pick. Doo Ho Choi is just far more fun to pick. And if I see a little highlight of him getting a knockout, I'm going to get all freaky and funky. I'm just joking. All right, let's drop down and wait to the smallest men's weight class, the men's flyweights, as Cody Durden takes on Bruno Bulldog Silva. Cody Durden is 16-5-1. Bruno Silva is 13-5-2 with 1 no contest. 5'7-5'4 gives Cody Durden 3 inches in height. He has 2 inches in reach, 67 inches to 65. He stands in the southpaw stance, Bruno Silva in the orthodox fighting position. Cody Durden, the -120 favorite, 33 years old, from Georgia. Of those 16 wins, he has 11 finishes, 6 KOs, and 5 submissions. Of those 5 losses, though, he has been submitted 4 times. He was actually supposed to fight Carlos Hernandez at UFC 303. That fight fell through, so in steps Bruno Silva, was it 3 weeks later? Cody Durden joined the UFC in 2020. He was in his debut, was fighting at bantamweight, took Chris Gutierrez to a draw, pretty impressive. Then got submitted by Jimmy Flick, got submitted by Mamma Mokaev. Then went on an incredible 4-fight win streak, including wins over Charles Johnson and Jake Hadley, aged very well. Did last fight in December, got submitted by Tagir Limbekov, but Tagir is super talented. I don't really want to hold that against Cody Durden. He faced 5 submission attempts in 2 rounds, which is very hard to go against. And, I mean, you know, submissions are clearly not his strong suit. So if Bruno Silva's going to get a win anywhere, it's going to be by submission. Even though Cody Durden is a grappler himself, in a 3-fight stretch, you know, from 2022 to 2023, he landed a combined 19 takedowns in those 3 fights. So He's pretty good at grappling himself. The underdog, plus 100, Bruno Silva, 34 years old, born in Sao Paulo, Brazil, but now lives and trains out of Phoenix, Arizona. Of his 13 wins, he has four submissions and five KOs. Of his five losses, he's been finished twice. He was actually supposed to fight on September 23rd against, I mean, I think it was just some random opponent making his debut, but instead takes this fight, and we'll see how he does. He's currently on a 3-fight win streak, and I mean, here's a guy who joins the UFC, gets David Dork, gets Tigre Limbekov, loses both of those, right? 2021, round two performance of the night, knockout, okay? 2021, May, round one, performance of the night, knockout in a minute. Last fought in March of 2023, round two, rear naked choke of Tyson Nam. So Bruno Silva is coming in with some momentum. It's really tough to say. Cody Durden, I won't lie, you know, his last two fights were in front of crowds. Bruno Silva, last fight was in front of a crowd. I mean, it's tough to say. It's really tough to say with these, but I don't know. Cody Durden, as durable as he is, you know, as game as he always seems to be, I'm feeling like we're going to ride with Bruno Silva in this one. I mean, he's a plus 100 underdog. He's coming off a finish streak. Cody Durden is, you know, doesn't necessarily have the biggest win when it comes to anyone in the UFC. And you know what? Bruno Silva, we'll throw him a lob and see how he does. Let's go with it. Moving to the men's lightweight division, Kurt Holobow is back in action against Kanan Bahia Krucheski. Kurt Holobow is 21-8 with one no contest. Kanan Krucheski, 15-2 with one no contest. 6 foot to 5'11 gives Kanan 1 inch in height, and he has 3 inches in reach, 73 inches to 70 inches. Both men stand in the orthodox fighting position. Let's start with the plus 130 underdog, Kurt Holobow, 37 years old from Louisiana. Of those 21 wins, 7 KOs, and 10 submissions. Of those 8 losses, he's only ever been finished twice. Kurt Holobow, similar to Cody Gibson, this is his second stint in the UFC. This actually is his third, now that I've looked at it, from 2013. He had two fights in 2013, lost both of those. Fought on the first ever episode of Dana White's Contender Series. Got a win, then it was ruled to a no contest. Came back with that. Lost the fight of the night to Raoni Barcelos. Got armbarred by Shane Burgos. Then lost to Diego Moises. Nope. Took 4 years off. Came back, won the Ultimate Fighter for lightweight. Beat Austin Hubbard, submitted him. Then came back in March, and Trey Ogden just pieced him apart, so Kurt Holobow, fairly untested. Don't know what to expect with this guy, but the same kind of goes for his opponent, the minus 155 favorite, Kanan Krucheski, 33 years old from Brazil, 4 KOs and 9 submissions, so 13 of his 15 wins are by finish. We love to see that. His 2 losses, though, are by KO. So, you know, fought in September of 2023 on Dana's Qatar Series, round 1 submission. Then fought in November, and Elvis Brenner knocked his lights out cold in 4 minutes. So I know that must be tough for Kanan. You know, he was clearly coming in with some momentum, but Elvis Brenner put his lights out. I don't think that's going to stop him, though. I do not think that's going to stop him. I think Kanan Krucheski is durable. I think he is UFC quality, and I think he's going to prove it with a little round two knockout of Kurt Holobow. I think Kurt is past his prime. I don't really think he has a set game plan anymore, and we're going to give Kanan a chance here. Like I said, all these fights, 50-50. We'll see what happens, but we're going to ride with Kanan. Plus, Kurt Holobow, I just don't really care for him for some reason. No offense, Kurt. If you ever want to come to the podcast, I'll have you. Moving back down to featherweight, I mean, we have had loads featherweight fights tonight. Holy cow. Steve, Mean Machine Garcia takes on Sungwoo Sting Choi, our second to last South Korean fighter of the evening. The minus 145 favorite, Steve Garcia, 15-5. The plus 120 underdog, Sungwoo Choi, 11-6. Both men are 6 foot, 75 inches to 74 inches. Gives Steve just 1 inch in height. Southpaw stands for Steve Mean Machine. Orthodox for Sungwoo Sting. Let's kick it off with Steve Garcia, guys. 32 years old from New Mexico. Of his 15 wins, 12 knockouts. That's the name of the game. He puts brothers out cold with his fists. Very impressive. Of those 5 losses, he's been finished twice. Once by Mahashot in 2022, and another long ago on the independent scene. Currently on a 3-fight win streak, last fought in December of 2023. Round 1 knockout of Chase Hooper, landed 3 knockdowns in a minute and a half. After getting knocked down in round one by Shailene Nurdambeek in April of 2023, fought back for round two TKO, and then brutalized Melquiz Alcosta. I mean, bloodied him to oblivion in December. So, Steve Garcia, I know how good he is. He is currently 4-2 in the UFC. All four of those wins are knockouts. So, Steve Garcia, he brings the boxing. He looks crisp when he's doing it. I'm excited to see him back in action. His opponent, Sungwoo Choi, 31 years old from South Korea. Of his 11 wins, he has 6 KOs. Of his 6 losses, though, he's been finished in 4 of them. Sungwoo Choi, another unpredictable man as it comes. You know, joined in 2019, and 2019 went 1-2. You know, his debut was Moz Varevlov, so a tough guy. After that, Gavin Tucker. Then went on a little 3-fight win streak, including a round one knockout of Julian Arosa, probably his biggest win to date. After that, submitted by Alex Carrez, lost a split decision to Josh Kliabal, got knocked out by Michael Trezano. Had one fight last year in August, beat Jarno Ahrens in a gritty battle. You know, Sungwoo Choi, you know, this should not really reassure anyone at all. In his last 3 fights, he's been knocked down 5 times. That is not good. I definitely think that Steve Garcia is going to bring the boxing, going to bring the pressure, and I'm going to say a little round one knockout. We're going to get ambitious with it. I'm saying Steve Garcia brings it. And I honestly didn't think he was going to beat Melquiz Alcosta last time out. Damn, he proved me wrong, so you best bet we're not going against the mean machine this time around. Final South Korean fighter of the night is actually in our co-main event of the evening as Brad Tavares takes on Jung Young, the Iron Turtle Park, in the co-main event. Brad Tavares, 20-10. Jung Young Park is 17-6. 5'10" to 6'1" gives Jung Young a 3-inch height disadvantage. Brad Tavares has the height. 1 inch in reach as well for Brad Tavares, 74 to 73. Both men are in the orthodox stance. Brad Tavares is a plus 155 underdog for this matchup. 36 years old, born in Hawaii, now lives and trains at Extreme Couture in Las Vegas. Of those 20 wins, 5 KOs and 2 subs, so kind of a decision machine. Of those 10 losses, he's been KO'd in half of them 5 times, so not the best. Brad Tavares has been around a long while, like I said, 36 years old, been a veteran of the game, been fighting since 2010 in the UFC. Some notable opponents he's fought in Yoel Romero, Tim Bosch, Robert Whittaker, Elias Theodor, Israel Adesanya, Edmund Shabazian, Antonio Carlos Jr., Omari Makhmedov, Driscus Duplessis, Bruno Silva, Chris Weidman, Gregor Rodriguez. Most recently fought Gregor Rodriguez in February, got knocked out. Last win was over Chris Weidman in August last year. I mean, Brad Tavares, he fights them all. He's, you know, he's tough as nails, but it's no easy coming. He's fighting a real grappler here in Jung Young, the Iron Turtle Park, the minus 185 favorite for this one. 33 years old from South Korea, 11 finishes, 5 KOs, and 6 submissions. Of those 6 losses, he's been finished 3 times. Had previously been on a 4-fight win streak before getting out-grappled by Andre Munoz in December. Lost a split decision there. But, I mean, other than that, his UFC losses are Anthony Hernandez in 2019, Gregor Rodriguez in 2021. He's pretty talented. Biggest career win, I'd say, is probably over Eric Anders in 2022. Jung Young Park, very talented, very shifty, very gritty. He's good at getting it done. You best bet I'm riding with the Iron Turtle for this matchup. Brad Tavares is just, he's almost reached an Andrei Arlovsky point for me, where he just kind of stands there, casually boxes. Maybe he'll get something done. More often than not, nothing really transpires. Who knows what Brad Tavares will show up, but I'm riding with Jung Young Park to, we'll say decision, but who knows? He can even get a little submission action. We'll have to see. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to our main event of the evening, finally. Am I right? Amanda Lemos takes on Virna Carcara Jandiroba. Amanda Lemos is the number 3 women's strawweight in the world. Virna Jandiroba is ranked at number 5. In the women's pound-for-pound rankings, Amanda Lemos is the number 12 woman, technically, in the world, according to the UFC. Yeah, right. Amanda, plus 110 underdog. Virna Jandiroba is the favorite at minus 135. Let's kick it off. Amanda Lemos, 14-3-1. It's crazy. I feel like she should have way more fights. Virna Jandiroba, an impressive 20-3. 5'4 to 5'3 gives Amanda Lemos 1 inch in height. She also has 1 inch in reach, 65 inches to 64. Southpaw for Amanda Lemos, orthodox for Virna Jandiroba. Let's kick it off with the former title challenger, Amanda Lemos. Like I said, the plus 110 underdog, 37 years old. You know, she does not fight like she's 37 years old. She fights like a young up-and-comer. 8 KOs and 3 submissions, ain't too bad. 11 of 14 wins by finish. Of her 3 losses, she has been finished twice. I will say it's funny that the only person not able to finish her was Zhang Weili, which is pretty comical, but Amanda Lemos joined in 2017, then lost to Leslie Smith. Took 2 years off, came back, and went on a 5-fight win streak. Very impressive, including 3 round one finishes and a fight of the night against Angela Hill. Then got submitted by Jessica Andrade in her first main event in 2022. Followed that up with a round two guillotine of Michelle Watson Gomez. Win a main event against Marina Rodriguez. Unfortunately, get brutalized. Might have been 50-40'd in the Zhang Weili fight in August 2023. And most recently, had one of the greatest women's fights I've ever seen. The lowest IQ in a fight I've definitely seen against Mackenzie Dern in February. One of the better women fights of the year. I fairly enjoyed that. So, I mean, what is she? 8-3 in the UFC? That is not bad in the slightest. Amanda Lemos, she's action-packed. She's action-packed. I am yet to see a boring Amanda Lemos fight since she's been in the UFC, which is what we like. It's the exact opposite for the number 5 woman strawweight, Virna Carcara Jandiroba, the minus 135 favorite. 36 years old, also from Brazil. Over 20 wins, 1 KO, and 13 submissions. Crazy enough, she's never been finished in her 3 losses. And all 3 of those losses have come in the UFC. 1 to Carla Esparza, former champion. 1 to Mackenzie Dern, top 5, top 10. Or 1 to Amanda Lemos, top 15er. Virna, I mean, she's six and three in the UFC. 3 fight win streak. It's all been done through grappling. Beat Angela Hill in May of 2022, 7 minutes of control time. Beat Marina Rodriguez in May of 2023, 12 minutes of control time. And most recently beat Lupi Godinez in March of 2024, 6.5 minutes, 2-for-9 on takedown. So that's the name of the game. Takedowns. She has 2 finishes in the UFC. One was in 2019, one was in 2020. Both were submissions. So if you're Jandiroba, she's gone for more control style of fighting. I'm gonna be very ambitious here. I think Amanda Lemos brings the freaking pressure. Either knocks out or submits Vera Jandiroba in round number 1. That's the only fun thing we can do. I'm really upset if Vera Jandiroba wins this matchup. Amanda Lemos was way more exciting. She's way more entertaining. I think her striking is far better. The only area Amanda Lemos needs to stay away from is being outgrappled. So if she can get away from that, this will be good. I'm fairly confused why the UFC gave us such a bad card. This is almost like a filler episode with no main characters. It's that bad. But, if Amanda Lemos wins, she could be back in title shot territory. And if Virna Jandiroba wins, she could also throw her name into the title shot territory. So, lots of fun stuff ahead. Recapping our predictions, we picked 5. We picked 5 underdogs out of the 12 total fights on the card. So, I'll be excited to see what happens. Lots of fun stuff ahead. That's all we got for this episode. Fun little episode. A lot of UFC talk. A lot of fun predicting UFC Vegas 94. Looking at Baby Steps Millionaires. Of course, talking about the rest of the year. UFC Noche. Lots of fun stuff ahead on the Surprise Jab Podcast. Guys, have an amazing weekend. Have an amazing week whenever you listen to this. Just make it the greatest day. You know, you'll never know. You never know. You might not wake up tomorrow. So always try and do something that you wish you would have done the day previous. So live it up. Have a good one. And as always, I will make sure to catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.